Welcome to Everything Went Black podcast, episode number 20. Once again, I'm utilizing technology to talk to Aaron Harris, formerly of ISIS. Aaron and I have been friends for nearly two decades. We met somewhere in Maine on a winter night when our bands were playing a show together in front of about seven people. The setting was something like this, mid-90s DIY venue in a small college town, dead of winter, a cold New England winter. I remember the kids that ran the venue had one of those large industrial propane heaters that looked like a jet engine to heat up the space. I think they called them salamanders. It was cold. It was great catching up with Aaron and hearing about Palms, the new band he's doing with Cliff and Jeff from ISIS and Chino from the Deftones. These days, with everyone living on two different coasts and everyone spread so thin, doing bands, living their lives, working their jobs, it was really meaningful to me that we were able to synchronize our schedules and find the time to have this talk. Yeah, it's pretty cool technological advance that we have happening here. Yeah. So, dude, like the last time I saw you was on that last ISIS tour. I don't think I've seen you since then, in person at least.
No, I saw you at the Tomb show at the Roxy.
Oh yeah. That's still a long time ago, though.
Yeah, it's still a while, yeah.
Yeah. So you've been up to a bunch of stuff the last couple of years since ISIS broke up. So you want to get into some of that?
Yeah, for sure. Whatever you want to talk about, man.
Yeah. When the band broke up, like when you guys decided to, disband, did you start playing immediately, or did you, get more into recording, or like what was your mission after the band, stopped playing?
I kind of took a break. I just kind of paused and kind of, let things sort of sink in and just try to figure out what I wanted to do and, what the best direction would be for me to go. I guess I had all the sort of emotions you have when something big in your life changes, and you kind of accept it at first and think it's a good thing, and then you start to get a little bit upset and you start to get angry, or that, those are some of the things that I went through. And I remember telling my wife that I wasn't even sure I wanted to continue to play music. I was just kind of sick of the whole thing. I was kind of soured by the breakup and I've invested so much of my life in music and then one day have it all kind of just, dissolve. And, it's pretty much all I had known since I was a kid, since I was 17 years old, and I was 32 when ISIS broke up. So, that was a pretty significant part of my life. And, I thought about it for a while, and, I'd been doing recording and producing on the side and even while ISIS was existent. And, that was always a path I wanted to go down. I was just kind of trying to figure out if I wanted to keep doing music, and just kind of one day I was like, wow, music is what I love. It's what I do. It's what I've known for years, and it's what I want to keep doing. I think I just needed the time to, get over it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what was some of the stuff about music in general that you got sort of burned out on? Like, what things about being in a band or playing music like burned you out?
I guess it's it's a lot of work, and I invested a lot of my life in it, and then one day it was gone, and I guess I felt bitter about that, and you know, I never really wanted to be bitter about music, and I got bummed out when people were bitter about it and bitter about touring and bitter about, you know, all the work that is involved in being in a band and being a musician. And I always thought that was lame. You know, it's not as hard as some people make it out to be, you know, and, but, you know, when the band broke up, I just kind of was like, I don't know, sick of dealing with people in bands and sick of the musician types and sick of, you know, just kind of, like I said, bitter on the whole experience. Not that I didn't appreciate all that we had and, you know, all the fans and the support and stuff like that. It was just me trying to, you know, get over, you know, the feelings I had about the breakup.
So, but now you have a new project that you're working on, and, you know, with, some of your former bandmates. So like, how did that come about?
You know, we took the break, and it didn't take long for me to, you know, I pretty much hit the ground running. The break I had where I just sort of figured things out was only a couple weeks. And, you know, and then that realization of, oh yeah, music is what I do and what I want to do. And, Jeff and Cliff still lived here in town, and we still had the practice space, the ISIS practice space. And, yeah, I remember just getting together with those guys and saying, hey, we should keep playing. Like, we all live here. I love you guys. You're like brothers, you know, and we write music so easily together. And I definitely want to keep playing my drums. So, you know, whether we're just playing for fun or whether it becomes something, I'd still love to play with you guys. And, you know, it started off pretty slow because I think those guys, you know, were also in the same boat and just kind of figuring out, you know, what we were going to do and where it was heading. And, you know, it was weird playing together in the ISIS practice space, just the three of us. And, you know, we'd done so much stuff with ISIS there, and it was kind of hard to get going. And, once we moved practice spaces to a new space and kind of got a fresh start and a new environment, it was a lot easier for us to, you know, separate the two things and feel like this was something new. And, you know, once the music started being written and we all kind of figured out what we were doing, and, you know, it just kind of poured out of us. We had way more stuff than we needed, and, you know, have tons and tons and hours of demos and stuff to just pick through. But, you know, I'm really happy that I'm still playing with those guys and that, you know, we have this new band called Palms, and it's, you know, we have Gino from the Deftones on vocals, and it's, you know, it's different than ISIS. There's definitely some elements there, you know, some similarities. I mean, it's three of the guys from ISIS, but it's definitely different and exciting and fresh and fun, you know?
Yeah, well, you know, having Chino in the band, I mean, he's an actual, like the only, his only instrument is vocals, so I think that is probably a lot more vocal stuff going on. I mean, I haven't heard any of the material you guys have yet, so.
Yeah, it's cool, man. He does play guitar, but he hasn't, I think he wants to maybe add some guitar here and there, but, you know, he's, you know, once Chino said he wanted to do the band and wanted to be a part of it, we started writing with him in mind, and I think the songs really lend themselves to, you know, to having him on vocals. And the stuff that he's done so far has been really cool. You know, it's just adds a whole new flavor to the mix, you know, so it's fun.
Is there a record coming out, or is there one out?
We have a record coming out on Ipecac in the spring of 2013. The actual release date is yet to be set in stone, but it's, you know, it's going to be early spring on Ipecac.
Is it? It's all recorded, and, you know, at this point, or you still have more work to do on it?
All the music's recorded, and the vocals are being recorded right now. So once the vocals are done, I have everything sort of pre-mixed, you know, and once we finish up the vocals, it won't take long for me to, you know, I'm recording and mixing it, and it it won't take long for me to finish it up. So, you know, it's as soon as we finish the vocals, it'll be pretty much done.
Yeah. Is this going to be like a touring kind of scenario, or, you know, or just kind of leaving it open-ended right now?
We definitely want to tour and play. It's just kind of going to, it's going to depend on Chino's schedule, you know. I mean, Deftones definitely come first and foremost, and we expressed that to him that we didn't want to, you know, step on their toes, and we wanted to make sure that those guys knew that, you know, we've all expressed that we do want to tour on this and play it live, you know, like I said, it's just going to depend on scheduling, but shouldn't be that hard.
You're how long have you been living in LA at this point?
I think just recently, it we turned over 8 years that we've been here. I moved out with Cliff. We drove out together, and he texted me the other day and said that it was exactly 8 years.
Did you live with Cliff at that house that was down the street from where the Manson murders were?
No, but I moved him. I helped him move in there. That was a funny house. It was Jeff and Cliff and Chris, the ISIS merch guy.
Yeah,
Chris Nelson. And I didn't live there, but I definitely spent some time there. It was fun place to hang out and barbecues and yeah, it was on Waverly Drive.
Yeah, that's where the LaBianca family was brutally murdered by the Manson family.
Yeah, we drove by that house a bunch of times. I don't remember who figured that out, but it was really close to where those guys lived.
Yeah, because I remember the first time going on tour with Anodyne out there, we stayed with Cliff and Jeff and, you know, Chris at that house, and I just remember, me and Josh are like real up on all that Manson stuff, and we took a walk to try to find the actual address, and the address has changed, but the house, I think, is still there. And we sort of pinpointed where the house was, you know, based on the surrounding numbers and whatnot. So.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that, like you said, that the address has changed, but the house, yeah, it was right up the street from those guys. It was kind of crazy.
Can you imagine moving into a house like that?
No.
You know?
No, I did like a Halloween tour of some crime scenes throughout Los Angeles. We went to, who is thought to have been the Black Dahlia murderer. I don't know all the details, but I think it was a doctor, and it's who they believe was the Black Dahlia murderer. But when you drive by the house, you're just like, wow, yeah, totally. It's just, you know, it's totally overgrown and really dark. It's kind of like, just looks like a place that somebody capable of something like that would live. You know what I mean?
Someone capable of that murder.
And it's just, I don't know, we went to all these different spots, and it was kind of strange, creepy to be in some of these places.
Yeah, like I am, fond of James Ellroy, you know, the crime writer who from El Monte, California.
Right.
And, like going out to see you guys, like on tour and whatnot, I've always, kind of like envisioned all that sort of, '60s, '50s, like crime. Noir, like LA noir, like vibe of that city. And, there's a lot of stuff I like about LA. I mean, I don't know if I could actually ever live out there, personally, but it's cool, like visiting. So do you come back east, often, like, for the holidays or anything like that?
I don't as much as I should. I still I travel so much, and, it's just hard for me to take time from when I'm home to go, back home for visits. I need to get back more often, but I just recently went back. I did a tour, drum teching for Abe Cunningham from the Deftones, and flew out a little early and went up and visited my family in Maine, but I don't get back nearly as much as I should. And, you know, I miss it and I would like to get back more, but, you know, I do love LA and like you were saying, it's such a great place. And I don't think a lot of people get to see the good parts of LA and what it's, it has to offer. You know, I remember touring with Isis and only seeing, you know, the Troubadour and Melrose Street and, you know, just the shitty parts of LA that really don't represent it that well, you know. And once I moved here and I saw all the great stuff around and the mountains and the, you know, great bike riding and stuff like that, you know, you can exercise, you know, all year long here, which is, you know, important for me, which, you know, I like being outdoors and getting exercise, and the weather's great, so.
Yeah, that's something that's out here, man. Like, once the winter hits, it just, your whole body shuts down. You know, once you start getting into the winter months out here on the East Coast, it's just any motivation, it's dark and cold. And you just want to, like, fucking lay under a blanket, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, I remember just, you know, just want to even eat more. You know, you just want to be comforted by something, you know. It's hard to get up and exercise. You know, you just want to sit around and stuff your face and, you know, eat really high-calorie foods and just feel some sort of comfort because it's so brutal.
Yeah, it's so miserable outside.
Yeah.
Yeah, I never really, it wasn't until you guys moved out there, like, you know, all, like, you know, Hydrahead and, you know, Thompson and Jay Bennett and the guys in Isis, you know, the rest of the guys in your band. It wasn't really until you guys moved out there that I actually got an appreciation for that city. Because the same deal, it's like, you know, I would just pass through and it would be just the venue and trying to figure out, like, where to go. And I remember the first time I went to L.A., you know, back in the 90s or whatever, you know, we were, like, going to drive down the Sunset Strip and, like, you know, we were, like, bummed out that there weren't any of these, like, glam rock dudes around and hookers. And we was kind of let down, man, because I think we played like on a Monday night or something, so it wasn't like this rip roaring, you know.
Yeah.
Girls evening, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, everybody, you know, there's the cliche of just calling it plastic. Everybody, you know, says it's so fake out here and this and that. And, I mean, there's that stuff too, but I mean, you just got to know where to go and can't really focus on the negative parts of LA. I mean, to me, there's so much other great shit. I could probably convince anyone that LA was, you know, a lot better than maybe what they think it is.
Yeah. It's funny, just the other day I was listening to Wavering Radiant, like, you know, once we were talking about, you know, doing this thing.
Yeah.
And, that record is definitely, I mean, you guys just got, you know, entered into the, you know, Decibel Hall of Fame with, what was it? Was it Oceanic that got entered or was it?
Yep, yeah. Oceanic.
And, but to me, I think my favorite record by you guys actually is Wavering Radiant. I remember when we did that tour together, a few years ago, you know, it was that record had just come out and, you know, just seeing you guys play those songs live every night was, you know, it was pretty cool. Like, that opening track.
Oh, yeah, Hall of the Dead.
Hall of the Dead, yeah. And that was, yeah. That was like one of my, yeah, that one, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
that was like one of my favorite songs. It's funny, you imagine if, like, I actually thought I was talking to someone else right now. I actually thought I was talking to Trevor from Pelican instead of you, because I got, like, you know, confused that I'm talking to Trevor like next week on Monday, but I'm actually thinking I'm talking to him instead of you. And I think I'm talking about a Pelican record.
You know, that record, that Isis record, What We All Come to Need, that one. That's a great record.
But yeah, that was a great tour, man. It was, you know, for us, that was like the first, you know, we just had Winter Hours out and, that was like the first of the,
I'm just laughing thinking about that tour because it was It was so much fun. I mean, it was, you know, we've been friends for a long time. I've known you for, God, 15, 20 years
well,
now.
Well, didn't you run away from home or something like that? Like, you fucking ended up to, you ran away from home to play a show in, like, Boston or something like that. Wasn't that the story?
Pretty much, yeah. I just remember cracking jokes with you on that tour and, you know, just being stupid. And I actually did an interview the other day with somebody from Birmingham, Alabama.
Oh,
and they were talking about the show at the Bottle Tree. And that one stands out. Like, you know, that was a really fun night.
Yeah, I got drunk that night.
Just cracking jokes with you and making up songs. And
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, every night it was just like, you know.
I stayed at your hotel that night. I stayed with you and your sound guy.
And Greg Moss, yeah.
Was it Greg?
I remember that.
No.
It was John Overstreet.
John Overstreet was your sound guy on that tour.
Yeah, you're right. It was John Overstreet.
Yeah.
Yeah, no wonder you got drunk.
I was having that was a particularly rough period of, you know, my journey. I think those few months was like a particularly rough spot for me. And it's probably better that I was on tour instead of at home, honestly, during that phase. But,
yeah.
You know, but yeah, that actually, I did an interview with a guy in Birmingham too. And, we're getting ready to go on tour in a couple of weeks, and he's actually going to fly to New York to like, check out the show. And
cool. I think it's the same guy.
Dude, yeah.
When he asked me to do the interview, I looked at his blog and I think you had just done one with him. So that was a good interview, man. That guy was cool.
Yeah, he was definitely cool. And, yeah, Birmingham's like weird because, you know, you think you're in Alabama, you don't really think of, I don't have any real impressions of Alabama. And then you come to a town like Birmingham and it's like, you know, an actual town with culture in it and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah. Especially the Bottle Tree. I love that place. I'd love to play there again sometime. It's just a fun, you know, fun venue. It's cool people. And, you know, nobody was, they actually greeted you when you walked in the door and they didn't treat you like you were some fucking asshole that was invading their club and, you know, some, have to fucking chase someone around to figure out where you load in. You know, like, they were actually helpful, nice people, and not, like, you know, washed up, you know, bitter dicks like most clubs, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Though my favorite, actually, a few days prior to that, when we were in Houston, I think.
Yeah, we didn't even, the dude fucking took off and didn't pay us, and didn't have money for you guys to eat, so you were like, you're like, can I at least get some fucking hot water so I can make some soup?
Yeah.
We had to shake the guy down to get paid.
Yeah, definitely, man. It was some squirrely.
You know,
squirrely.
So you go from something like that, you know, which is, you know, almost sort of what you expect from a lot of these places. You know, not getting paid, but, you know how it is, man.
Yeah.
It's fucking rough sometimes.
Yeah, you know, it's like that fucking Bon Jovi song, man. You know, what's that, the one where he's a cowboy, you know?
Yeah.
That one. And he's like talking about the rigors of touring, and he's like staying in a fucking 5-star hotel room with like catered fucking filet mignon, and I'm driving around in this like jet.
You know? Jetting around. It's
real like
tough.
You know, hard road, man.
Yeah, it's hard living.
But that Houston show that I thought was even funnier was originally they wanted to put you guys in like some, you know, the tour in like this like side room or something like that. It was like some, it wasn't even the main venue or something. It was like this fucking, you know, the small room of like this.
Yeah, it was like where they had they stored all the broken gear.
but Joris took control of the situation and like, you know, straightened everyone out.
Yeah, that dude, the Belgian hammer, man. Yeah, didn't take shit.
Started
calling him the house sound guy, Flashback. Remember that?
Yeah. That guy, he's the guy who mixed us. And I remember our, you know, Andrew was the guy was playing, you know, some band on the PA system, and it was Andrew's like, "What is this? This shit fucking sucks!" Like all loud, you know. He's like yelling it. You know how he's like really loud sometimes. He's like,
yeah.
We're like setting our gear up, and it's the dude's mic and the drum set up, and he's like, "This is fucking terrible, man." It turned out it was like the sound guy's band or something.
It was Flashback's band.
Yeah, and he was like,
checking the PA with his own band.
It was, oops, sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure that happens a lot.
I mean, come on, man. It's like, if you're going to, like, play your own band over the PA system, you're kind of, like, leaving yourself open for some shots, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. You're setting yourself up for something. Definitely.
Yeah. But Pelican was on that tour, too, right? That was, like, us, because we toured Pelican a few times, but I think that particular tour was, like, Isis, Pelican, and Tombs, right?
Yeah, it was a great tour. So definitely one of my favorites, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I remember Spanish Moon in Baton Rouge, that was a fun one.
Yeah.
And I had my espresso machine and just get loaded up on espresso and, you know, acting stupid. And, like I said, cracking jokes.
Have you ever heard of that band, Dredge?
I've heard the name, and Dredge. I feel like some people have sent me multiple messages, you know, comparing ISIS to Dredge.
No.
Or like trying to get me to listen to Dredge or something.
No, there's no comparison between you guys. No.
Okay. No, I've never heard them.
Because right before we did the tour with you guys, we were out with Pelican and Wolves in the Throne Room, and there was like a couple of dates before the Wolves in the Throne Room guys joined up that were Dredge, Pelican, and us.
Uh-huh.
And I had no idea who they were. Like, I thought, you know, it's spelled D-R-E-D-G, and, you know, I thought it was like some, like, you know, European, like, black metal band or something, you know, like with some obscure spelling or whatever, and...
Yeah, right.
You know, they turned out to be, you know, kind of like Incubus or something, like one of those sort of commercial radio type of bands.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but the reason why I'm connecting to this, like, concept of them is their singer also carried around a espresso maker with him on tour. And, you know, he's like one of those dudes who's like, you would, like... From stage, he's like, I'd like to thank everyone for coming, I'd like to thank Tombs, and then like walk right by you like afterwards and not say a word to you, but pretend he doesn't know you and stuff.
You go up to him after the show and like say hello, and he's like, oh, you know, hey, thank you, know, you want me to sign something? You know, like, yeah, he has no idea who you are.
You know, a joke, and all jokes aside, man, he actually did, the drummer actually did that to Andrew. Like, the first night, like, we was in Arkansas somewhere, and you know, we show up to the venue, and you know, we load in the back, and there's like all this gear, all these road cases with stenciled Dredge, you know, on the side, and this whole fucking, you know, all these crew guys and shit. And I'm like,
where were you guys playing?
It was like a 300 capacity room. It wasn't even like a big venue, really.
Oh, man, what a bummer.
And, I'm like, wow, man, there's like some, you know, like rock stars here, man. This is fucking, it's gonna be cool. You know, like, so I go into the venue, and there's these kind of like ordinary looking guys up there, like tuning the guitars and setting up the gear. And I'm like, wow, it's not really what I thought those guys would look like. You know, they're like dudes with like Affliction t-shirts on and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it turned out that they had the band plus like these roadies and like a sound guy and a merch dude and like, you know, all these like this crew, this massive crew for this like tour.
To play at 300 capacity club.
Yeah. It was like the rooms weren't very big. And also most, honestly, straight up, most people there see Pelican anyway.
Yeah. And, right.
But, so anyway, yeah, that was, and then they, you know, they sound checked, you know, for hours and stuff. But yeah, it was just really, that was like my introduction then. Oh yeah, so the drummer, like we saw the Pelican guys, so we went over and talked to him, and this guy is hanging out, drinking like a protein shake, like Ripped Fuel or something like that. And, like, he's got like Ripped Fuel and like, you know.
Yeah.
And, he's like, oh man, really excited about this tour. I mean, the tour with them was only like 4 days or whatever. They were only on for like 4 days, but they're like, oh, looking forward to these shows, man. It's going to be great. You know, he's like shaking your hand, but like looking at your shoulder kind of, like he's not looking you in the eye. Like he's not,
looking you in Yeah.
He can't look you in the eye. He's kind of looking off to the side, like using his peripheral vision to kind of check you out a little bit, you know?
Yeah, it's like half hard. He doesn't really mean what he's saying.
Yeah, and then I remember, like, you know, oh, nice guy, you know, he's pretty cool, you know, whatever. And then 2 days later, you know, like, Andrew goes up to him and he's like, you know, because actually the guy was a good drummer. He was like one of those, like, you know, tasteful, kind of like, you know, like Alan Cage kind of dudes, you know what I'm saying? Like, who's,
yeah, sure.
You know, he's not really, you know, he's not so, he's in the pocket, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, talking about a good drummer, man.
Yeah, like minimal fills, but like real tasteful.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, he was nowhere near as good as Alan Cage, but that was his trip, you know what I mean? You know what I'm saying? And then,
sure.
So Andrew was like going to compliment him. And,
you know, say hello, yeah.
Yeah, just, right. He's like, oh, hey, he remembered his name and everything, you know, and.
Decent human being.
Yeah, like a regular human would be. And the dude is like, oh, hey, man. You know, not even really looking at him. Like, hey, thanks for coming out.
Coming tonight. Yeah, yeah. that's awesome.
That's my favorite thing, man, about touring, like, with supporting other bands, is, like, when they don't know who the fuck you are at the end of the night.
Yeah, I've done whole tours with people and not said one word to them, you know?
Yeah, totally, man.
You're on the road for a month with people and you don't say one word to them. It's amazing.
Yeah, and that's the opposite of how it was when, like, we were all out. Like, you know, I didn't really know the Pelican guys that well. Like we were literally, like, on tour with those guys for about 8 weeks pretty much around that time because we had the tour with them and Wolves in the Throne Room, and then, like, a week or two later, we were out with all three of our bands together. And, you know, as a result of all that, like, I got to be really good friends with those dudes and, like, you know, Trevor and, like, Larry, like, you know, Brian, Laurent, like, all those guys are really cool. Like, to this day, like, I'm, you know, still in touch with all those guys.
Yeah, man. What a good group of guys, you know?
Yeah. You know, we just did a bunch of dates in Europe with them, like, around Road. We played Roadburn with them, too, around the same day.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and that was a lot of fun, man. You know?
That's awesome.
I got to meet Tom G. Warrior from Celtic Frost, Triptychon, and that was, like, fucking, dude, I was, like, we were loading into that venue, and I was just suddenly the guy's like standing right next to me, you know, and
yeah,
you know, I'm like, you know, I'm not, I don't want to, you know, he's with some woman, you know, his wife or girlfriend or whatever. I didn't want to, like, you know, invade his personal space or anything, you know, but I had to say, you know,
yeah, I like, say hello, yeah.
I like you guys, I like your band, you know, like, just like, you know, hey man, thanks, you know, and he was totally cool, man. That was really, I got, took this awesome photo with them and everything.
That's awesome. I think we played a festival with them one time. They were the headliner and we, you know, I didn't get to meet anybody, but I think we did play one show with them.
Yeah. No, that was a lot of fun. You guys played Roadburn, right?
Yeah. Yeah. We played it. I can't remember who the headliner was. I think we were the headliner the night we played, but I don't remember. It's hard to remember.
Yeah.
You know.
The that same night that we played, Sleep was, you know, the headliner. And So I wasn't around, but I guess Matt Pike, like, grabbed Andrew or something or tried to choke him or, you know, picked him up and threw him against the wall or something like that. You know?
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. You know, I don't know that guy, but he seems like a little bit, you know, a little bit of a loose cannon. But Andrew has photos of him, like, gripping him up against the wall.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Did he go into rehab pretty soon after that?
I don't know. Like I said, I don't know that guy. I don't know anything about him. I gotta say, I'm not even really a fan of, I like maybe the first Sleep record and Asbestos Death, maybe. But, that stoner rock stuff doesn't really, you know, I'm not into it, man. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not my thing, you know?
Yeah, I like Black Sabbath, but...
Well, Black Sabbath is, like, the blueprint for so much stuff that came afterward, man. I mean, they're just, you know, they created a whole genre. I mean, they touched, like, metal, punk, hardcore, like, every genre owes something to Sabbath and, like, Slayer and...
Yeah, and, you're totally right,
and,
yeah.
Black Flag, like, those three bands are, like, the triumvirate of, you know, hard
Sabbath,
hard music or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah,
there's this kid around that doesn't, like, he plays in a band that is, you know, a sort of metal-style band, and I remember he doesn't like any of those three bands.
Wow.
I find that strange, and I was just like...
Yeah.
So we always refer to him as the guy who doesn't like Slayer, so with the black flag.
Well, is he young? Is he a kid?
No, he's an older guy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well,
I question that, man.
Yeah, you'd think you would like one of those bands, or at least, you know. Yeah, I mean, I don't think I've ever met anyone that didn't like Black Sabbath. I mean, what's not to like?
Yeah, even dudes who are like indie rock bands like Black Sabbath, you know.
Yeah.
So as far as, like, producing and stuff and, like, engineering, like, what kind of stuff have you been working on recently? You know, I know that you've been doing a lot of work over the last few years.
Yeah, I just finished a record for a band from San Diego called Sleep Lady. I'm really excited about that record to come out. I guess I would describe them sort of in the vein of, you know, some of the stuff we would listen to, like... The guitar tones really reminded me of Hum.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And there's a couple girls in the band, and there's some vocals that sort of are reminiscent of, you know, like Portishead or, you know, there's some, you know, sort of like really heavy, sludgy parts. Yeah, really excited about that. And I just finished that. I just mixed a band from Russia called Weary Eyes. They're kind of sort of post-rock-esque. Also kind of reminded me of like Sonic Youth almost. I remember asking them, like, do you guys listen to Sonic Youth or like Dinosaur Jr. or anything like that? And you know, they said they liked those bands but weren't really influenced by them. So, you know, it's kind of interesting what you hear and what the band kind of feels they're influenced by, you know. Also another record I just did by a band from Bulgaria called the Mental Architects. It's like kind of like a proggy mathy rock, post rock kind of band. That record's out, it's called Celebrations. I worked on some Pelican stuff. Been working with Jacob. Those guys are still working on their record. They tracked the whole record and weren't happy with the tracking. They tracked it down in New Zealand, and I was just going to mix it. And we've been doing post-production, and they went in and tracked the songs. And Jeff, the guitar player's delay, it screwed up, and he ended up using a delay that he wasn't really familiar with. So he's unhappy with a lot of the guitar parts, and yeah, they're working on redoing a bunch of that stuff, so, you know. And those guys were on the tour that we did with you guys too, right?
Oh, yeah, that just the West Coast tour. Yeah, like we, yeah, that, right. That tour was only out on the West Coast. Yeah.
Oh, that was the last ISIS
tour
of the West Coast part.
Right, before, and you guys did the East Coast with Melvin's, and it was just us and Jacob on the West Coast with you guys.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, you guys are all rolling in those sprinters.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome, man.
Black sprinters.
Yeah, two sprinters. Like special ops unit.
Like the FBI rolling around.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a lot of fun, man. That was, you know, I'm glad. It really meant a lot to me personally to be part of that, at least, you know, at least that one leg of it, you know.
Yeah, it was really appropriate, you know. It's awesome.
Yeah, I know Andrew went up to the very last show up in Montreal, and I was like on I had obligations down here which I couldn't really get out of, but I would love to have been up there for the last show. That would have been great, you know.
Oh, yeah. Well, thanks, man.
I actually completely vividly remember like when you guys were talking about doing that first show up there at the Underworld.
Yeah,
like back in like 1996 or something like that.
The first show and the first ever ISIS show.
Yeah, it was like with Cable and you know, I think
Downcast or something.
Overcast,
that's what it was.
Yeah. I don't want to say maybe Drowning Man was involved in that too.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a really bad snowstorm. We drove all the way up there like idiots and got there, and it was like I think it was like in a skate park. I remember kids hanging out and skating, and yeah, it was strange.
Yeah, Montreal has always been a cool place though, man.
It seems like
you know, really, you know, I mean, even for Tombs, like our shows up there have been really good, and probably a lot of it had to do with playing up there with you guys, I imagine, because we got a chance to get in front of a lot of people, you know.
I remember playing up there with you and Anodyne, you know.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, I mean, we've been up there a bunch together.
Yeah. I remember, that was when Taz and Ale were in Anodyne, back in the first lineup of that band.
I think, wasn't Mike?
Mike Davis.
Davis is in the band, too.
Yeah, it was Davis, Taz, me, and Ale.
Yeah, that was so cool.
And then, that was like, I think the only time, I think that lineup only lasted for like maybe 5 or 6 shows. And then Josh joined and, replaced Mike. And then we did a tour. Actually, then Taz dropped off because, you know, he was like, you know, getting married and all that sort of stuff, becoming a family guy. And that's when we got, Mike Swanson / Ira Bronson playing drums.
That's right.
Yeah. Actually, Ira did the website that, you know, this podcast is part of like, you know, my media site, which is going to be launching in a couple weeks.
Oh, cool.
And, Ira did the design for that. And,
oh, right. Yeah. Tell him I said hello.
Yeah. He's like, you know, well on his way into like having like a really good career as a designer and, you know, all that kind of stuff.
That's awesome.
But yeah, that was always, Montreal was always like it's almost like going to Europe without leaving North America in some ways, you know?
Yeah. It definitely feels different, you know?
Yeah. You know, and in Toronto, it just feels like you're in, you know, like Ohio or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
But, there was also that other town, Sherbrooke too.
Sherbrooke, yeah. That's actually the show I think I remember. I actually remember that one because it was like, I think Turner was wheeling out his full stack. I think he had like a, I'm trying to remember, maybe like a Mesa Boogie full, you know, 2 Mesa Boogies and maybe a Sun Model T or maybe 2 Model Ts or something. I don't remember, but he was wheeling it out, and I remember as he was wheeling it along, one of the wheels caught, and the whole stack, the heads and everything, fell over. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do. That's like probably one of the only things I remember about that show was that horrible fucking moment, man.
It wasn't during the show. I think it was after, during Loadout.
Yeah.
And the whole stack, the heads just, you know, the heads fell from, you know, 6 feet.
Ugh.
Off the ground, just hit that hard floor, and just, man, what a bummer.
Oh, and Jay Randall was in the band at that point, too.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that was before Clifford joined up.
Yeah, Jesus. That was an interesting point in time for the band.
You know what's even funnier is how almost all of us worked at the Newbury Comics Warehouse.
Pretty much all of us,
except for Turner, and I think even Cackside worked there for like a couple of days, I think.
He did. Yeah, he worked there. I mean, that's where I met Jeff.
Yeah, that's right. That's right, actually, yeah.
So everyone but Turner worked at Newbury at some point, and definitely all you know, we all worked there at once. I think Jeff was the only one who split. And then it was me and Mike and Cliff were there throughout. No, Cliff, I guess, left at some point too, but anyway, yeah, I mean, that's where I met Jeff, and he had just moved to town, and he was like, hey, me and my roommate want to start a band, and we're looking for a drummer. He asked me if I wanted to try out.
Yeah.
And, I was like, yeah, sure. And, so we played, and it went really well, and started playing some more, and that's how ISIS started.
Didn't you like kind of, you like played for a minute and then like you like kind of drifted away for a minute too, and then like you came back though, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I because I was doing Loga at the time.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And ISIS was like my second band, so when I definitely wanted to do something new, and Loga wasn't doing too much, and I kind of felt like those guys, you know, Sean and Ian were kind of moving away from, you know, they were growing up and they were about to graduate college and move on with their lives, and that was the other two guys in Loga, and so I wanted to keep playing music, and that's what I was there to do, and so I played with Aaron and Jeff and Chris Mareshuk on keys, the original keyboard player, and we played a bit, and then I really wanted to focus on Loga, and I didn't feel I had time to do both bands, so I told those guys I was going to quit, but they asked if I could record the songs that we had written so that they could try to find somebody else. So there's somewhere out there, there's original pre-Mosquito Control versions of a couple of those songs.
Oh, okay.
Even before Mosquito Control, that Dean actually recorded.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, I remember. Yeah, actually, I do remember that. Yeah.
And, or maybe you recorded them.
I recorded the demo, which...
Oh, you recorded the demo, that's right.
Yeah, but there was actually something prior to that. I do remember. It was just...
Yeah, that was Dean.
Yeah, that was Dean.
Those were Mosquito Control songs, and somewhere out there, there's those songs, and... or maybe they were demo songs. I guess they would have been demo songs, pre-demo songs. Mm-hmm. And I recorded those songs, and then they were trying to find a drummer, and I would keep seeing those guys around town and ask if they found anybody, and they hadn't. And I don't know. I went and saw Today Is the Day upstairs at the Middle East, and it was when it was the lineup where it was the three piece. It was right when that
Temple of the Morning Star.
Yeah, right when that one came out.
Yeah.
It was like so just, I think Chris Reeser was in the band, and I think Brad Elrod was on drums at that point, and I just remember seeing that lineup upstairs, and just like, it just destroyed me, man. I was like, I've never seen that. It was just so loud and powerful, and Steve was like super passionate, and just, you know, I just never seen a show like that, and, I went home that night and I was just like, man, maybe I want to keep playing with these ISIS guys. And, you know, so I think I called them up like the next day and was like, hey, maybe we should try to play again, you know? And, you know, so.
Yeah, that was, I think Zenny Giva was actually the headliner of that show, because I was at that show too, I think.
Oh, okay.
He's upstairs.
God, that was such an intense show.
Yeah, that was definitely when, I mean, at that phase, at that time, Today's Day was probably my favorite band, actually. Like, I remember mid to late 90s, like, that band was, you know, I worshipped that band. I thought they were, like, you know, the future of music, you know, at that particular time.
I didn't like too much after that, but that record and that lineup was unbelievable.
Those demo versions, I actually pressed them up and sold them in Europe as a rare 7-inch. You know, like no label or contact information, just like a fucking 7-inch.
Straight up bootleg.
Yeah. So yeah, that's what happened to him, man. Like I did like a couple hundred of them.
Nice.
You know, sold them. I think I gave a bunch away. Yeah.
Nice super limited demo versions.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Sounds like something you would do.
Yeah, definitely something I would do. Yeah. Also, Randy Larson was in the band for like in those early practices, because I remember seeing him. We were in the same building, rehearsal building.
Yeah, he was in the band for a minute. He was let's see. He was when we wanted to get a second guitar player, Randy was who we got, and I think he. You know, he actually wrote some of those. I mean, it's like I say, it's hard for me to remember what actually happened But I think he wrote some of those, wrote with us some of those Mosquito Control songs. So, you know, I remember some of those songs being written with Randy, and when he decided to leave the band, it was kind of a bummer because we had written these songs, or maybe it was Red Sea with, you know, two guitars, and suddenly one was gone, and Aaron had to, you know, do what he could to make up the space. But I think we had a show with Silent Green right like a week after that Randy had left the band, so we were just kind of like, shit, what are we going to do? Like, we've written these songs, they've had two guitars, like, so we played them as a four-piece.
Yeah, I remember a couple of those shows, seeing you guys as just a four-piece, and I want to say that Silent Green show is one that I Hate God played, too.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think maybe Crowbar, too, or something
like
that.
Oh, dude, yeah, that's like... That was like, you know, a lot of people like that band Crowbar, and that, you know, I never have been able to get over seeing them play that night, because it was like, they played forever, and it was like, you know,
yeah.
I have such a bias against them, you know, and probably I should let it go at this point in my life, but ever since that show, I've always been like, oh my God, those are the guys who played for like fucking, what was like an hour almost or something.
I think, didn't somebody in the band overdose on Coke that night or something like that?
Actually, that was I think it was I Hate God, because when they went to play, Mike Williams wasn't singing for them. It was some guy with a beard, like some, you know, other
Yeah, you're right, he overdosed on something.
Yeah, and they're
he overdosed and died at the police downstairs for a minute. Jesus,
I can't even tell you how many times I've seen I Hate God, man. It's just like, back in that era, though, they were, like, scary and awesome and, you know, great. But I got to tell you, like, recently, I just don't feel it anymore, man. The magic's gone.
Yeah, the magic's gone. We toured with them, and I have some pretty funny stories about those guys. I mean, they were just, you know, they just get so wasted and fucked up. And, you know, Mike would smash bottles and cut himself. And he'd come off stage just, like, all bloody. I remember he came off stage one night, smashed some glass or bottle or something, and cut himself. And he came off stage, he just all wrapped his hand in gauze, and he just kept saying, "I hate gauze, I hate gauze," and it's like covered in blood. Like, they were the real deal. I remember also another show. It was like in, I want to say it was in Virginia, and it was one of those stupid rock clubs, you know, just like,
oh,
they don't really have rock shows.
Yeah,
it's like a dance club, but they have rock shows every now and then. And
it's called like Jax or something like that.
It's called I think it was Jax.
Yeah,
and we, you know, they had like some big asshole security guards, and I went to like a Whole Foods or something up the way and gotten those soy milk kind of like juice boxes.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I got one of those, and I was coming back to the club, and I was walking in, and I had one of those, and the security guard was like, "Yeah, you can't bring that in here." And I was like, "Well, I'm playing tonight. Like, this is some of my, I bought this. This is food. I'm bringing this in. This is like part of my dinner, you know?
Yeah.
Like, just let me in with it." And he wouldn't let me in. And Mike, the singer of I Hate God, was walking by, and he heard the whole interaction, and he was like, "Man, just let him in. What's he going to do with the juice box? Smash it?"
There's that one venue in Portland that has security guys like that, too. I remember when we played there a couple years ago, like, it was this deal where, like, they wouldn't let you leave or some shit like that. Like, you had to, once you're in, you're in.
You can't leave.
You couldn't leave. And I think it was Carson who went out to the van to get something, like, you know, his bass or some shit, like, or strings or something like that, or, you know.
Yeah.
And fucking the door guy was like, "You can't come in, man. You can't come back in. Once you leave, you can't come back in." And Carson's like, "Well, I'm playing in, like, 20 minutes, man." It's like, "I don't care. You can't come back in." And we had to go and get, like, you know, some management-type guy to, like, you know, like, distract the security guard, you know, like shine like a penny at him, like, you know, to, you know, to like distract his like reptilian brain so he let Carson back in, you know what I'm saying? And
yeah.
I hate when that's,
and distract him.
I hate when that's those situations like that. Hey, did you ever meet, Big Red, Pelican's, sound guy?
Yeah, Chris.
Is awesome, man. I love that guy.
That's
aside from not seeing those guys regularly, I miss Chris too, man. That guy was great, just hanging out on the road with that guy.
I just saw him at a festival in I think it was in Montreal. I was just out with the Deftones. He was doing sound for somebody, and I hadn't seen him for years.
Yeah, he's working with some like pretty big, you know, artists these days.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, we were playing in Austin one night, and I remember he was there. Like, I don't know, he was traveling with somebody, it was like a night off or whatever, and he just like showed up at the venue.
Yeah.
And I smelled like weed or something.
I
smelled like some marijuana, and I look over and it's like, like Big Red's like burning one, you know, he's like burning some weed, you know.
sounds right.
Yeah. And then he ended up mixing us that night, and I thought that was really cool, you know.
Oh, cool. Yeah, he's cool, man. I like that guy.
Yeah. Man, you know, but, so yeah, dude, hopefully you guys make it out on the road soon, man. You know, this new band you got going on.
Yeah, I'm really excited, and I haven't toured or played in years, and I'm really itching to, and I think, I'm just excited for the record to come out and people to hear what we're doing now, and I'm super excited about these songs and the whole thing, having Tino involved and doing something new and still playing with Jeff and Cliff, and, you know, because these guys are like my musical partners, you know, like, just, it's not hard to play with those guys, you know, it's great.
Do you have like a particular studio you work out of in LA, or do a lot of stuff home, or?
I have a mix studio at home, but for tracking, there's a studio I like a lot called Infrasonic Sound. They're kind of, I don't know if they're owned by or what the affiliation is, but there's some affiliation with Vintage King, the Pro Audio dealer.
Oh, okay.
It's a really cool studio in sort of like East LA, they have a really, really nice drum room. They have a Trident board. They have some really great, you know, outboard stuff, like some Shadow Hills and some Neve stuff and some. Lots of boutique kind of stuff. There's always something new in there. It's always new stuff, new compressors, new pre's. They have some Calrec stuff. You know, you can track the tape.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they've got some cool plate verbs, and you know, it's. It's a cool studio. I like working out of there.
Your mix setup at home, is that, you know, do you do a lot of mixing at home?
Mostly, yeah. I try to mix at home when I can because it's all my stuff's right here. I know how it sounds, and you know, it definitely helps budget wise for bands that don't have a lot of money to spend because you know I'm not paying a day rate here. Like I would be at a studio and a place that I'm not really all that familiar with. So I think it works out for everyone to be doing it this way, you know, and, I've got a really happy with my setup right now. I just got an Apogee Symphony that I like a lot. And, I've got some bits and pieces of gear. I just keep, you know, collecting stuff and, upgrading and getting new crap, so there's always new shit in here.
Well, fucking A, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's about, we'll probably wrap this thing up, man, try to keep it under an hour or so.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
Alright, dude, thank you for taking the time out and, you know, doing this talk, man.
Yeah, thanks for asking me. It's always good to talk to you and reminisce, and we could probably talk for hours.
Yeah, and bore everybody probably with some stories about,
you know. Stupid stories.
Stupid stories about fucking nothing.
That shit doesn't really matter.